Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. Translation. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc. of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation. Full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literature, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Purport. While I'm going through the purport, just try to see, we will get an idea about the timeline when Prabhupada wrote this purport, and you'll pick it up. It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best, even the worst. It is said that the intelligent men should pick up nectar from a stock of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. There are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place without exception, but a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord, because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. While preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend China has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field. Yet we see that they were both India and China, and they both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason that they have lived days in the atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God fearing, pure hearted and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause for quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land which is not very suitable for habitation, and certainly there is no cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slightest provocation. This is due not to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Systematically, there is a propaganda by a section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there is a great need of disseminating this message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world to do all supermost good as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Because India has failed in the duty of by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be change of heart, and naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people in general are tools in the hands of modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of the leaders only, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere. The purport is very long, and I'm just going to skip a couple of stanzas to come to the end of the purport. We are sure, therefore, that everyone in the human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by Sri Narad, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna, requesting blessings of Maharaj. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for coming. Really honored, and all from all devotees to speak few words. We have just finished the Purushottam Mass yesterday, so I'm very honored to have this service of speaking a few words to break the Purushottam Vrata. So I need to bring the context of this verse. This is one of the most beautiful verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, and if we just contemplate and meditate on this verse itself, we will have so much of purification. So let's bring this verse into the context. And I'm sure you've been hearing for the last few days to a couple of weeks on this chapter. And in this context of the verse, Narad Muni is instructing Vyasadev. And as we know that Narad is the Shakshi Avishev Avatar of the Lord. So Shakti Avishev Avatar of the Lord means he's empowered. All the Shakti Avishev Avatar are empowerment. They get empowerment. Either it's direct empowerment when the Lord comes himself, or indirect when he empowers somebody to do some particular service. And Narad Muni is empowered to give the devotion service. The knowledge of devotion service inspire devotees to become go into devotion service. Now his disciple is Ved Vyas. Now try to understand this very important point, that Ved Vyas himself is a Shakti Avishev Avatar. He was empowered by the Lord to compose the Vedas. Now, Narad Muni comes as a spiritual master of Ved Vyas. Now, there's a very important point here, that the guru, the spiritual master, elevates the disciple beyond their duty and ability. Ved Vyas was empowered to come and compile Vedas. He could have done that and gone off. But no, his spiritual master elevated him beyond that ability to do something else. So hence this whole leela of Vedvyas asking that I am not satisfied with what we have done, I've done, and my heart is still very sore. So as we know, the guru is the representative of Krishna, and the mercy of Krishna comes to guru, and so he elevates him by instructing him that you have to glorify the devotion service, glorify the Lord, and then only you can get the satisfaction in your heart. Now we are living in a very polluted state today. The world is in a very polluted state. I'm not talking of pollution outside, but pollution inside as well. And what has it done? We know that there's increased frequency of earthquakes, quakes, calamities, and in the previous verse, Narad Muni talks about the crows, that any literature which doesn't glorify the Lord is like a pilgrimage of crows. And we know that crows generally hang around garbage. So effectively, how mundane the other literature is. So that brings us to the point of today's verse. I'm going to take few points in this verse and elaborate on them, and then we'll try and bring it together. So in this verse, Narad Muni talks about the impious lives of the world, misdirected civilization. And let's just see where we are. What's happening to this world? What's happening to the civilization of this world? I'm sure a lot of you have read this and heard this. There was a survey in UK just in 2017 as to how many people are religious. And for the first time, the number of people who are religious dropped below 50%, which means more than 50% of people in this country do not want to be religious. And you can see where it's going. So more than 50% of people say no to religion. Interesting, if you break it down into the different age groups, less than 24 years of age, only 3% are Anglican and 5% are Catholics. And 75% of 18 to 24 year olds say that we don't want religion. So obviously the older age group still wants religion, but if you take the average, it's less than 50%. So the younger age group are getting more and more no religion. Now we don't need any more proof for this misdirected civilization. Now this figure of 75% was 66% in 2015. So how rapidly this civilization has become misdirected. So of the breakdown of the less than 50%, 15% were Anglican, 9% were Catholic, 17% were other Christians and 6% were other religions, and I'm talking about UK. And then this whole concept of SBNR. How many of you have heard about SBNR? Show of hands. Spiritual but not religious. Anybody heard of that? So there's a big movement now of spiritual but not religious. So this is a stance, people take of spirituality that takes issue with the organized religion. They have a point that the religion is very organized. According to them, spiritual is something high, the mind, body, spirit. We have a whole program here on Wednesday evening of mind, body, spirit. They think that spiritual is something very, very glamorous, something very in thing, something very cool. But religion, oh no. It is organizational or communal dimensions. So they find religion being very strict, very organized, pushing them in one direction and not letting them have any flexibility. But you know, they say we want to have flexibility. We want to have, you know, we want to be cool, but we don't want to be told what to do. We don't want to go in that direction. So this term actually was first named in 2000. By an author called Sven Erlandsson in his book SBNR, and that's how it has caught up as a big movement in America. And it has got five distinct categories. I'm not going to preach on this, but it's just important for us to know why they do what they do so that we can preach to them to see where the misdirected civilization can be moved to. So first category is dissenters. So these people dissent. They are turned off religious affiliation because of some personal experience. So they don't want to be part of it. Some others are casuals. They just dip in and out and they do spirituality as on needed basis. When I want something, I'll do be spiritual, be nice, and then when I go off to do my other things. Then they are explorers. They dip in and out. Then there are seekers who want to find a new identity. They don't know about religion, but they just want to find a new identity. And then there are immigrants who are just trying to settle into a spiritual environment. Now, these people who follow this so-called SPNR, they have an inner seeking. They want to seek something, but they don't want to be told what to do. And that's where the world wants to go. And it really pains to see how many people commit suicide. In US, in 2015, this 45,000 people committed suicide in that year. It was the third largest leading cause of death. And we, some of us read the news, and we hear the likes of Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, and Robin Williams committing suicide. Now, these people are materially have everything that one can desire. Money, fame, everything. And they are still committing suicide. Why? What's going on here? What's missing? So I'm going to bring you to a concept which I thought about when Robin Williams committed suicide in 2014, and I talk about the concept of anchor. Everybody knows what anchor is. Anybody who doesn't know anchor? Okay. So the anchor is something that you drop from a ship, goes right into the ground and holds the ship because this anchor is something immovable. Now we all need an anchor. Some of us look at our families, our spouses, our children. Some of us look at our money or some of our possessions to be our anchor. Now a husband walks into the house really depressed, wanting to really have a shoulder to cry on, and the spouse that is supposed to be the anchor is very upset about something else. Can he see her as an anchor that day? No. Child may be busy in something else, can't see as an anchor. Money, there could be a calamity and all the money is gone. So if we are looking for an anchor, which is a movable feast, we are barking at the wrong tree. If the anchor moves, we have no hope to remain stable. When Krishna says about material world as dukhalaya shashvatam, it is temporary and full of miseries. And temporary means not only temporary in a whole scheme of things. temporary even on a day-to-day affair. So what we look into the material world may not be stable. So if we are looking for an anchor which is moving or unstable, how can we be stable? So these people who are looking for the anchor, whether again in money, whether in fame, and something goes wrong, the anchor moves and they move. Some move more, some move less. Some move to the extent that they commit suicide, some move less, but they get depressed. So that brings us to see what should be our anchor. And what that would lead us to this whole revolution in the misdirected civilization. Because the anchor cannot be material. Anything in the material world cannot be an anchor. It can be a help, it can be a support system, but it can't be your anchor. So anchor has to be beyond material world by definition. Just makes perfect logic. It has to be spiritual. And what better spiritual anchor could be besides the Supreme Lord himself? Very interesting. When you meet people outside, they shake hands, right? You go to meet somebody, you take your hand out and shake it. Does anybody know why people shake hands? People say, yeah? Correct. Very nice. So people shake hands because of a friendly gesture. And it started in the 5th century BC in the medieval Europe. And what happens that the king used to carry weapons like a knife under their sleeve. And if they meet somebody and they didn't like that person, they'll quickly take the weapon out and stab him. So you had to shake your hand to show that you are a friend. Because if you shake your hand and there no weapon dropped, that means you didn't have a malintention. And that's how shaking hand started. So even to shake hand, you had to prove that you are not a culprit. So even that, from that point, we are looking at the world getting misdirected. But I heard a very interesting saying. On Saturday, I was telling one of my patients, and it was an 84-year-old gentleman, that this is how you shake. He shook my hand. So I was telling him the story. And he said, that's very nice. And while he was walking out, he said to me that Tagore said that if the sun goes out of your life, don't have so many tears that you can't even see the stars. That's a very profound meaning. I was just thinking about it and reflecting it, that on this world of doom and gloom and depression, and when everything is going not so cool for us, we need to understand that there is a huge glimmer of hope. And that brings us to the point about where we are and how do we change this issue of the misdirected civilization. So we are very fortunate as devotees. I had in my previous classes mentioned about the emergency situation, that spiritual life is not a luxury. Spiritual life is an emergency. The house is on fire and we have to get out of it. Not by, you know, doing text messaging while we are getting out. We have to run for life. And that's where we have to take the spiritual life. So these people outside, when we are talking of people, more than 50% people in UK saying that we don't want religion, when we are looking at 76% of 18 to 24 years old saying that we don't want any religion, what are they looking for? Now, an organized religion, which is very fanatical, can put people off. And you can understand why. But we have such a beautiful process of Krishna consciousness. Now, if you went to these people and said, look, I'm only talking about two things, and for me, and Maharaj will correct me if I'm wrong, that for me, the Krishna consciousness concept has two main pillars. One is love, and one is service. Love is the prayojan. So prayojana means love of Krishna, love of God. That's where we want to get to. And for that, we manifest love among other devotees as well. And the second concept is service. How do we do that? We serve. And we want to be the eternal servant of the Lord. So if you went to somebody and said, look, I have a philosophy which offers love, which offers an attitude of service. I do not believe that any logical person would say, I don't want that. And really, the crux of Krishna conscious philosophy is for me is these two concepts of service, to serve, and then to attain the love of God, which manifests obviously everybody wants to be loved and to love them. So that is so simple, and we offer the love, we care, compassion, sanctified food, music, enjoying the company of like-minded people. But anything we do in life comes with some rules and regulations. You cannot drive a car without stopping at the traffic light. So if these spiritual seekers are looking for complete freedom, well, they're in the wrong place. Even anywhere outside in the world, complete freedom doesn't exist. You have to be bound by rules when anything you do. You go to work, you drive, you stop at the red light, you have to look at the signals, you have to do this, you have to do that. So naturally you follow rules and regulations anyway, because either you're fearful or whatever else. So effectively in this material world, when they are looking for finding the coolness without rules and regulations, it doesn't exist. So this misdirected civilization is what Narada is talking about. And this is the only way forward, is to have the spiritual anchor. Now, the second point in this verse is about the transcendental literatures. The transcendental literatures that are presented, and it's very interesting that it mentions that even if they are not written correctly, they are still very important. And that's very interesting. When I was reading that, I said, how can a transcendental literature be imperfect? So I'll read the translation again. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. So, when we are presenting the message of Godhead, some mistakes may be there. We can make some mistakes. But if the spirit of devotion is pure, then the message is pure. And we need to remember that. And Mahaprabhu exemplified this beautifully. So when Ishwarpuri asked Nimai, and Nimai, mind you, was the most successful, most educated, most knowledgeable person on the planet Earth. So Ishwarpuri is asking Nimai to edit his book, Krishna Lilamrita. And Nimai says, how can I edit your words? You are a great devotee, and even if your words are wrong, they are better than being right. So Mahaprabhu is exemplifying about this literature, that even if there is some way there's a mistake, or there's some thing to be edited, these words are pure. And you all must have heard the story of Brahman in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, and that's from the 998 to 102 verse. When in the Sri Rangakshetra, this Brahman used to visit the temple and daily and recite the entire text of Bhagavad Gita. And people joked about his pronunciation. He was so wrong. Often he didn't know what he was saying. Or it seemed that it was a joke. And he used to joke about him. So Mahaprabhu asked him, my dear sir, why are you in this ecstatic love? Which portion of Bhagavad Gita gives you this transcendental pleasure? And so Brahman says, I'm illiterate and therefore I do not know the meaning of these words. Sometimes I read the Bhagavad Gita correctly and sometimes incorrectly. But in any case, I'm doing this in compliance with the order of my spiritual master. So he says, actually, I only see Lord Krishna sitting on a chariot as Arjuna's charioteer. And taking the reins in his hands, he appears very beautiful and blackish. So Mahaprabhu said to the Brahman, the Brahman said, as long as I read the Bhagavad Gita, I simply see the Lord's beautiful features. It is for this reason that I am reading Bhagavad Gita and my mind cannot be distracted from this. So Mahaprabhu said to the Brahman, indeed, you are an authority in reading the Bhagavad Gita. Whatever you know constitutes the real purport of the Bhagavad Gita. Shri Shri Radha Gokulnand ki jai. Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Varnitai ki jai. So, we see by these two examples that even though the literatures may be incompletely improvised, but these transcendental literatures are purifying. And why was this specifically mentioned by Narad? Even when Shakespeare was writing his works, we know that more scholars will come, and probably more knowledgeable scholars will come as the time goes. So there will be, when it was written, in future, some imperfections can be gathered. So people will be analyzing, people will be looking with a microscope and teasing out few words that this was, spelling was wrong, this didn't fit into context. But it is the spirit of devotion. So these transcendental literatures are different than the mundane literature. And because they are transcendental, they would be, even if there is a spirit of a difference, it still is pure. So this is mentioned about the hearing. So what does the hearing do? Why do we talk about hearing? Why do we talk about the Shravanam being so important? So we know that the holy name has immense powers. But holy name, I would put down as 8 points. So holy name has 8 powers. The first is that it is samprachitta. It is a perfect atonement for all sins. And it is the ability of the holy name to purify more than the sins than anyone can commit. I'll repeat that. The holy name has the ability to purify more than the sins anyone can commit. That's how powerful the holy name is. And the second point is it's bhaktyodaya. It awakens bhakti. Third point is that it is samsuddhi, which means it is the perfect purification. Fourth is it is sarvabhava prabhava, which means it is effective in all moods. And that's interesting. When somebody is feeling very bad or rotten mood, and they try to pick up a mundane book, they will have no interest. But the holy name itself is sarvabhava prabhava. It is effective in all moods. If somebody is depressed, somebody is elevated, somebody is in good mood, bad mood, holy name always works. Fifth point, it is effective in all circumstances. And sixth is that it is sarva papa prakasha, that it counteracts all sins. It is achuta, it will never fail. It will purify at all costs. And finally, it is swato nashak. It is effective even when we are ignorant about it. So even if Prabhupada's chanting is going on in some house where they have no idea what it is, that Mahamantra will just keep purifying them. That's how strong the holy name is. And that's when we talk about hearing these literatures, hearing the holy name, that's what it means. So in Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami mentions that the beginning of Krishna consciousness and devotional service is hearing, and it's called Shravanam. And Garuda Puran, it is mentioned that the state of conditioned life in the material world is just like a man lying unconscious, bitten by a snake. That's what the state of a man in the conditioned life in this material world. And what's common between these two? Because in people in such unconscious state can be ended by the sound of a mantra. So when they are bitten by a snake or they are lying unconscious, they can be awakened by a mantra. That's the power of hearing. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, the 4th canto, 29th chapter in the 40th verse, the importance of hearing the pastimes of Lord is stated by Shukdev Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. And Shukdev Goswami says, "My dear king, one should stay at a place where the great acharyas speak about the transcendental activities of the Lord, and one should give oral reception to the nectarian river flowing like the moon-like faces of such great personalities. If someone eagerly continues to hear such transcendental sounds, then certainly he will become freed from all material hunger, thirst, fear, and lamentation, as well as illusions of the material existence." And we know that in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that a materialistic person can give up all his material hankerings by becoming situated in Krishna consciousness. Same way, in the 12th canto, the 3rd chapter, the 15th verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, A person who desires unalloyed devotional service to Lord Krishna, who is praised by transcendental sound vibration, should always hear about his glorification and transcendental qualities. This will surely kill all kinds of inauspiciousness in the heart. And I'm going to come to a conclusion soon. We know that there are four types of sound described in the Vedas. But one would like to know what is the definition of sound. And I found this very nice definition in the third canto, 26th chapter, 33rd verse of Bhagavatam. And the definition of sound in that is, persons who are learned and who have true knowledge. So persons who are learned and have true knowledge define sound. How do they define sound? As that which conveys the idea of an object, indicates the presence of a speaker, and constitutes the subtle form of ether. So sound is not simply a vibration of in the ether. It indicates the presence of a speaker, because somebody is speaking, and also it gives an idea of the object, what is being spoken about, and constitutes the subtle form of the ether. So it's much more than just some words. And there's a whole definition of akshara, which means that it is infallible or supreme. So the four types of sounds that we know about in the Vedas, first is the vekari vak, which is the grossest level of speech, where somebody is speaking to somebody and it is heard through the external senses. And this is vekari vak. The second is the madhyam vak, which is the intermediate expression. And these are the unexpressed states of sound, and they have a seat in the heart. And this refers often to mental speech. The third one is the Pashyanti Vak, where it goes further up the heart and becomes coupled with the assertive intelligence. And only those who are endowed with discriminative intelligence can feel this. So Pashyanti in Sanskrit means that which can be seen or visualized. So that sound which can be seen or visualized, that's Pashyanti Vak. And it possesses qualities such as color and form. So that's how that sound appears. And yogis who have inner vision can experience these qualities. But we are not interested in that. We are interested in the fourth one, which is the paravak. Paravak, para means the highest or the farthest. And that refers to the sound which is the transcendental sound. And that's what we have been talking about in this class today, as the transcendental sound bringing the revolution in people's lives. Now, I just wanted to mention about this word revolution. So the revolution means that a major change, something that really sweeps the world off. And there were American Revolution, there was all the revolution in the history, which certainly everything changed. And my dear devotees, it's time for a spiritual revolution. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world and started this revolution. He did not start the revolution because it was him and him alone. He empowered us. He gave us his books. He gave us his classes. He gave us his words. He gave himself to us so that we can carry this torch of the spiritual knowledge and disseminate in the world. We see how the world is suffering. We see how it is misdirected. We talked about people being not religious. We talked about people being spiritual but not religious. But we know that this is how misdirected they are. And it is not that we think that being transcendentalist or being a devotee is great. Of course it is. But we see the effect of these people who are misdirected. The mental health problems, the depression, the suicides, what are they indicating? They are indicating that they need help. Now, as doctors, we would treat the body. We attempt to treat the body. And that's fair enough. We have our place in society. But is that what's required? We need to go beyond that. So, again, my urgency becomes more urgent here. Krishna consciousness is not a luxury. It is an emergency. Krishna conscious philosophy on the pillars of love and service can be made acceptable to every single individual in this world, provided it is given not as a package of something pushing somebody to do in an organized way, but creating a revolution in the heart. Everybody is looking for love. They want to be loved. They want to love people. They want to serve people. It is the innate nature of the soul. Everybody is looking for that. And everybody is looking for help. It is our duty to get out of here and express this message in whatever way we can. It is so simple. It is not theoretical. It is not simply in the scriptures. It is actually a need. And the need is increasing day by day. So we as members of the Krishna Conscious Philosophy have a very big duty to perform. So I think I'm going to conclude here. It's 8:30. I would request Maharaj to please say a few words. I'm so honored by your presence, Maharaj. I felt very humbled in speaking in these words, but I'm so thankful that you're here. Please comment on the verse and please give us some more nectarian words. Hare Krishna.
Just briefly, I'll recount one point that was made by one of my godbrothers, Jagadish Prabhu. He said that this verse is a bhavishyavani, a prediction, because you find that even if this literature is imperfectly composed, it will create a revolution. So then he pointed to Prabhupada's writings. If you look at the original Bhagavatam printed in India, there's letters upside down, there's the English is not quite perfect. So many imperfections and mistakes are there. And yet, Prabhupada's writing has created a revolution in the misguided lives of people of the world. So, in this way, he found Prabhupada's work predicted in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I'm just going to summarize the what we said this morning. So we brought the verse into the context by mentioning that how does the guru pull the disciple out beyond the disciple's ability and duty, as Narad Muni brought Vedas out of the empowerment. He was empowered to compile Vedas. He lifted him out and beyond that to give him devotional service, to write devotional literature, to glorify the Lord. That was not the original plan for Vedvyas. He was a Shakti Avesh Avatar to just do the compilation of Vedas. But Narad Muni, who is the spiritual master, who is the representative of Krishna, came by his mercy, pulled him up beyond the duty and ability. And hence, spiritual master lifts us beyond what we can do, because he knows that what we are able to do. We talked about the misdirected civilization. We talked about the increasing number of no religion people in this country, and especially the youngsters. We talked about the 77% of 18 to 24 year old in the survey in UK 2 years ago, or this year, sorry, 1 year ago, said that they don't want religion. That's 3/4 of these youngsters do not want religion. We talked about the this big movement of spiritual but not religious. And we talked about the types of these people. We talked about they have the seeking in the heart, but they are misdirected because they think that religion is very institutionalized or pushing them in one direction, and it is fanatic. We talked about how we can negate that, because we have a wonderful philosophy of Krishna consciousness, which is based on two pillars. One is love and one is service. The love is the prayojana, which is the love of Krishna. That's the ultimate aim. And what is the abhideya? Abhideya is the service. So we serve the Lord, we serve the devotees, and we all become the eternal servant of the Lord. And this the soul has this innate nature of propensity to serve and to love. And when we offer this as a philosophy to the outer world on the so-called no religion people, they would accept it very happily, because this is the nature of the soul. Then we talked about that how although the literature could be miscompiled or misspelled. We talked about the two examples from Mahaprabhu's life. We talked about how he refused to edit his Guru Ishwarpuri's book. We talked about the Brahman who was reading the Bhagavad Gita and people were making jokes of him because he did not make sense in his pronunciation. But Mahaprabhu glorified him that he was the real knower of Bhagavad Gita. And then we talked about the different types of sound in the Vedic literature, and we talked about what is the power of holy name and how it can be effective in all circumstances, and it can purify more sins than one can commit. And then finally, I spoke about the concept of anchor, and I will leave you with those thoughts of an anchor. And I mentioned that if we are all looking for an anchor in this world, but if the anchor is anything material, which could be our family, which could be our friends, which could be money, which could be anything we possess, that is all immovable and temporary. When that moves and that's temporary, we shake. So we are looking, we are barking at the wrong tree, and hence we need to look at something beyond material life for an anchor. And if we look at an anchor which is in the spiritual world, who else can be a better anchor than Lord Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is where we should be looking for anchorage. So hence, spiritual life is not a luxury, it is a necessity. Hare Krishna, I'm going to end, it's 8:35. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.